did you guys all come from? My name is Judy. I'm an alcoholic. Yay. And I want to start by welcoming the newcomers to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think that it's a real important thing to do for me to remember the newcomers no matter what. Because there was somebody there that welcomed me when I got here, and I want that to be the same thing for the rest of you. I want to congratulate the birthday people, too. You know, whether it's one day or 100 years, it doesn't matter. It does not matter. It's just that you're here, and just that we need you here. Our 10-minute speaker was absolutely wonderful, and it's nice to be able to speak coherently, isn't it? Like in a continuum, huh? That always just makes me feel so good. I don't always do it either, by the way. So I'm going to get the vital statistics out of the way. My sobriety date is April 4th, 1975. That was quite a while ago. That's when I checked in this outfit. And I've been married 6 times. Not a lot of women can do that. And I've been married to the same man now for almost 30 years. But I haven't seen him in 15. And so I would say that I have just a lovely marriage. I am so happy. I am so happy, and I go to bed with my socks on. You know, it's like the frosting on the cake. Anyhow, what we do for the newcomers is we try to talk about what happened, what it was like, and what happened, and what it's like today. And I can tell you that the reason I drank is because I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan. And you get snow up to your ass in Grand Rapids all winter long. It's a cold place, right, Ron? Yeah, Netta's from there, too. I call her Netta. Want to take a bow, Netta?
No.
Oh. All right. He told me today that that he was going to come just in case you guys started chanting in the middle of my pitch. And I said, well, that would be real helpful. I also want to tell you, newcomers, that you have to keep your sense of humor no matter what. You know, I always tell people, if you're not bringing anything to my party, don't come. I don't want you there. You know, for what? Wayne can tell you how much fun I am. He called me to, Wayne or Larry? Who called? Larry. Well, I'm also old. Anyhow, I was sitting there watching my favorite TV program of all time. And the phone rang. And, you know, it's always one of those solicitor people that want to sell you stuff. But the ones I hate more than anything are the ones that say, "Hi, Judy. How are you?" And I think, you dirty bastard. And it was Larry. And I said, listen, I'm on the no-call list. The line goes silent. And I thought, that got rid of his F. And then he said, I'm not selling anything. I thought, oh, God. He said, I just wanted to invite you to be the speaker at our SoCal speakers meeting. Then I think I got down on my knee and genuflected and made a sign of the cross. But anyhow, so that was Larry's introduction to me. I bet you just had nightmares, didn't you? That old bat, what's she talking about? Anyhow, let's go back to Grand Rapids where I learned how to drink like a drunk, not like a lady, and not like a gentleman. My first drink was my first drunk and my first time in jail. In that order. The cops found me sitting in the back seat of somebody's car. I thought I was outsmarting them by hiding in somebody's car. And they took me out, took me to jail. And the thing is, you know, my dad thought it was cute. He thought it was real cute. And he encouraged that kind of, mischievous behavior. Yeah. And so that started my career. Get drunk, fall down. I fell down all the time. Find a man if you can. Throw up. Well, I threw up in the morning, actually. And go to jail. That was it. But there was a whole lot of pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization in with that stuff. I mean, you know, in those days, women weren't alcoholics. They just weren't. And we weren't allowed to be stumbling around. And I used to wear these little mini skirts, you know, with the big come catch me boots on and big beehive hairdo. And I mean, I was styling all the time. Oh, I had it going on. Yep. And I'd wake up in the morning, and my pantyhose would be ripped. My knees would be bleeding. I have a black eye. You know, and I'd think, how the hell did this happen? Again. I could not figure it out. I could not. I was baffled by it. I never thought about maybe drinking was causing it. Not ever in my life. And I had my favorite bar. It's called the Mousetrap. And, yeah. And I would go in there every time my husband came. I had two little kids that neither one of them could walk. And that husband, that was number two, he got one of his senior students pregnant. And I always said it destroyed my life until I found out it didn't. It didn't destroy my life. You know, I had some more drinking to do, and it gave me a lot of fuel. Those kind of things, you get a lot of mileage out of those things. And I got every mile out of that I could. And so what I did... Oh, for the newcomer ladies, I don't know if any of you have had problems with your children. I have three children, and I lost them all to alcoholism. All of them. I was an unfit parent. Yeah. That's what happens to us. You know, it isn't easy for women to be alcoholic. I know guys either. Men have their problems, blah, blah, blah. But for women, it is not easy trying to raise two little kids that can't walk, still are in diapers. And it just doesn't work. It doesn't work. So I told that husband, I say I lost him, and I did. I lost him to alcoholism. They were never legally taken away from me. I gave them to their dad, the one that got his student pregnant. Because I had work to do. I had to get out there and sling some more of those Budweisers. that's what I drank. I finally graduated to wine, though, because wine gets you where you're going real fast. I always tell people, if you're going to relapse, go out and get yourself a bottle of Thunderbird wine. Just start out on the bottom. Why bother with that other stuff? You know? Get some Thunderbird. Sit on the riverbank. Everything's going to be fine for you. And it was. It was. I came to California, geographic. Everything was going to be better here. And because my dad was here, and my dad always took care of me no matter what. And I was quite surprised because my dad had had abdominal aortic aneurysms, and he wasn't in any shape to take care of himself, let alone me. So I just did what I knew best. I started drinking daily out here. Why not? And that's when I called the dad of my kids and said, you know what, come here and get these kids, because California has a wonderful foster parent system. And if you don't get these kids, that's exactly where they're going. And I love my boys. I love all three of my boys with my heart. They are my heart. And I guess we'll get into the boys. Two of them are still mad at me. One calls me when he's drunk, so that's a sign of something. He calls me when he's drunk, and he likes to remind me about when I was lying on the sidewalk, and he was trying to figure out how to get me in the house. And I finally stopped him from telling me that stuff. I finally began to respect myself enough to say to him, look, don't call me again unless you're sober. Ripped my heart out to do that because he was my baby. And the oldest one is one that I was not allowed to see. And so I didn't see him after the age of 8. And I used to just pray, God, let me have those boys. Let me have another chance at raising these sons. And let me be a good mother. I know I would have been a good... Wouldn't I have been a good mother? You know, I'd have said, cool, whatever you want to do. But anyhow, I stopped asking for that. I just stopped. And I said, God, whatever your will is for me, thy will, not mine, be done. And so I was sitting there one day, and Netta was at my house. This was when I was living in Mexico. I lived in Mexico for the past 20 years. And Netta and I were sitting at Ron. I'm supposed to, yeah, his name is Ron. I call him Netta. Anyhow, we're sitting there one day, and I got a letter from my oldest son. And I opened it, read it, and I said, oh, my God, Ron, this kid wants to get together with me and talk. And what should I do? I need to, you know, get a ticket. I need to go back to Michigan. Ron says, what have you been doing? And I said, nothing. He said, well, it's working for you, isn't it? He's right. Absolutely right. You know, it's God's will, not mine. Once in a while, I think it's mine. And I try and, you know, like, insinuate myself in some of God's decisions. But anyhow, he's a preacher. And the other two are drunks, alcoholic addicts. This guy is a preacher. And he wrote me a letter and he said, I find that I am trying to preach about forgiveness, but first I have to do it. And so for the first time in 48 years, I saw my son 2 years ago. Yeah. talk about, is there no God? God either is everything or God is nothing. And you know where I stand on that. So he was here in July visiting with his wife, whom I had never met. And just a wonderful woman, just a wonderful woman. And I was kind of nervous. You know how you get. I was kind of nervous. I thought, oh, man, this woman's going to think I'm just a total loser, blah, blah, blah. And so I opened the door, and she was in front of him. And she put her arms out, and she said, hi, Mom. Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't even ask for that. I didn't even ask for that. And she's just a wonderful person. Just absolutely wonderful. And I'm so grateful to her for marrying my son and bringing three boys into their family and raising all these wonderful boys. Matter of fact, my son wants a tape of this because I was supposed to speak in July when they were here, but I was quite ill and I couldn't. And he wanted to go to that meeting, which was even more intimate. I'm thinking, oh, my God, this guy's a preacher. Try being the mother of a preacher. Man. But anyhow, so that's a little ahead of my story, but I think it fits right in. Now, the other two, I don't know. I don't know what God has in store for us. I tell them every chance I get that I love them forever with all my heart. And if there's anything I can do for them other than support their chemical dependency, I'll do it. I won't do that. I won't do that. I would if I could, believe me, because I'm that big a Al-Anon. Yeah, yeah. But anyhow, so I came to San Diego with some people over to TJ. I know. This is going to surprise you guys, but I was a nasty, nasty, mean drunk. I mean, the worst. And so I went to TJ with these people. And then the next thing I remember is standing on one of the freeways with a six-pack, smoking a cigar. I know. How the hell did I get there? I don't know. So I went to San Diego County Jail. That was a new experience. I used to go to Sybil Brand Institute. That's not a higher education place. Women's prison in L.A. But anyhow, so cops took me to jail. And they were, you know how they make you take your clothes off, all those disgusting things that they want you to do. And they noticed that I had blood all down the side of my side and my shirt and all that. And the cop said, what'd you do to yourself? And I said, I didn't do anything to myself. He said, well, somebody stuck a knife between your ribs here. So they took me to the hospital and all that stuff. Anyhow, they didn't let me go. They didn't feel sorry enough for me to let me go. But I wouldn't have had a place to go anyway because I was from Long Beach. And so I went, got that all sewed up, and they put me in this cell. And I remember waking up in the morning on the floor. And the first thought that came to me was, how many more times are you going to do this? What's it going to take? And so the guy in the San Diego County Jail, when they let me go, I said to the cop, I said, I don't know where to go. I didn't even have any shoes. And So he said, follow the yellow line. So I did. You know, my best thinking got me there. And so I followed the yellow line, and it said distressed travelers. That was me. I was a distressed traveler. And so I walked into this guy's. There's one guy sitting in the office all by himself, and he looked up. And this is the first time I ever said this about myself. I said, hi, my name is Judy. I'm an alcoholic. And he looked at me and he said, Jesus Christ. I mean, I must have just been a fright. I must have just been a fright. And he said, where are you going, Judy? I said, well, I'm from Long Beach. And I almost said I was hoping to catch a flight back there, but I decided that wouldn't really be the thing to do under the circumstances. So he said, do you really want to go to Long Beach? And I said, well, yeah, that's where I live. I don't know where else I could go. And he said, I'll tell you what, are you tired of drinking and waking up in jail? And I said, real tired of it. He said, well, what would you say if I could put you in a place that would keep you for 90 days or however long you got to be there, and they'll help you get sober, and you might even get your kids back. By then, we were old, intimate buddies, and I told him the whole shooting match. And I said, yeah, yeah, sounds good. So he didn't know I could hear him. But he went into another office, and he called this woman, and he said, you got any room out there? He said, I got one here that needs it bad. So I went. I went. It was that simple. I went. I didn't stay sober, but I went. And I got the foundation. You know, I got the seed was planted. Because I'd never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. Well, actually, I did. I heard it in Come Back, Little Sheba. Most of you are too young to know about that movie. But Burt Lancaster, I think it was, got up in the meeting and he says, I'm so-and-so and I'm an alcoholic. That's all I must have been four. I don't know, five. All I remember. It made such an impression on me. Anyhow, so I went back to Long Beach after I got out of the recovery house. And I knew that the people I was living with were the ones that stabbed me. And I knew I couldn't go back there. So I got dropped off at the Denny's restaurant. This was Christmas Eve. Denny's restaurant in Long Beach, on Long Beach Boulevard, and AA Central Office in Long Beach at the time was there, right above, over next door to Denny's. I didn't know that because I didn't know anything about, much about AA. Anyhow, I stayed in Denny's all night, sat there and drank coffee all night long. And I wasn't scared. I wasn't sad. I just didn't know what to do. You know, I was probably just totally shut down. See you guys later. And so I found my way to Central Office. Well, it was right next door. And it's got this big circle and triangle, and it says AA in there. I go, okay. So I went up there, and there was an old lady sitting at the coffee bar. Her name was Ethel. And I went in, and I sat down, and I told her I needed some coffee, and we talked. And she said, well, what are you doing here on Christmas morning? And I said, well, I don't have anywhere else to be. And we talked for a while, and I'll never forget. she reached out and she patted my hand and she said, "You're going to be okay." That's all that woman had to say to me, and I knew she was right. I knew I was going to be okay. And so from there, I started going to meetings. And I started going to meetings every day for newcomers. I want you to know that. I didn't have any fight left in me anymore. And I wasn't willing to see whether going to meetings would work or not work. I just went because I didn't have anywhere else to go. So the next day, no, it was later on that evening, I sat there with Ethel. And somebody came into the coffee bar. She said to the guy, she said, "Watch the coffee bar for me for a few minutes." She said, "I want to take Judy downtown, show her some places." So we got in her little Volkswagen and we went down to Ocean Boulevard. And we turned in this little alley, this little apartment complex. And she said, "This is my house." I said, "Oh, nice house." And so she gave me the key. She said, "You're going to stay here until you can get yourself on your feet." And until I said, I don't have money, Ethel. She said, "You don't need money." She said, "You need to pay back somehow, someday. But for right now, you don't need any money." And she said, "You need to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to put your hand out to people. And because somebody did that for me." So I did. And I remember I went back to school, and she told me, she said, "If you slack up a minute, don't come back here." I said, "Okay." So I went to school and got all involved in that, and I graduated, and I got a job in a medical office and a back office and did all that and started, you know, getting clothes and stuff. I'll never forget. Oh, and I had a sponsor. That's another thing I always need to remember, is that I believe in sponsorship. I totally believe in. My sponsor was my higher power. And I just acted as if there was a God somewhere. But she, Carmen, was my higher power. And you know what? It's okay. It's okay for the group, for your sponsor, for whoever, until you can get your very own creator in your life. Doesn't matter. I just hate it when people call it a doorknob. So if you ever do that, don't do it in front of me, because you'll probably get hurt. I'll have to hurt you. Anyhow, So I did that. I went to school. I finally got my own place, got my own job. I mean, this is truly an Alcoholics Anonymous success story. It really is. You know, I didn't live on welfare. I didn't live on, the dole. I didn't do that. I went to work, and I worked like a slave. And my sponsor used to tell me, "I want you to pick a spot right outside your office. And before you go in there every day, I want you to say, 'Father, please let me give my employer a fair shake today.'" That was one of the things that she asked me to do. She was kind of a meanie. She was a little Mexican woman, and she used to wear, she was chola in L.A., you know. We have cholas in L.A. Wore razors in her hair, and, you know, I mean, she was nobody's pushover, I'll tell you that much. And, you know, what's really interesting about that, though, is she relapsed. She relapsed. And then she went to the nut house. And that was the end of her. Yeah, I mean, she wasn't who she was anymore. Anyhow, so how am I doing on time here? Okay, good. Yeah. So what happened? I just told you that, didn't I? a lot of what happened. What it's like now for me is my life is just unbelievable. I was diagnosed 5 years ago with end-stage kidney failure. And I was living in Mexico, and so I had to go on dialysis and all that stuff. And then I was diagnosed with kidney cancer. So I had that kidney removed with the cancer. All of it was gone. And Ron was with me when I had, these are the kind of friends I have in Alcoholics Anonymous, newcomers, don't overlook this. Ron was with me. And he followed, you know how they come get you and take you on this gurney, and they have, you know, the doctor and the whoever, all those people. And Ron was walking behind the gurney. And he said, "Remember, dear, if it doesn't work out, I want the jewelry." He did, and he hollered it, too. He didn't just whisper it. And they all just turned around and looked at him. Who is this fool? So he was there with me. Great comfort, believe me. He really was. Anyhow, so I did that dialysis for about 3 years down in Mexico until I couldn't do it anymore, and I was dying down there. And Ron came down and got me. And hauled my old crazy ass up here. And he said, you can't go back there, you know. You can't go back there anymore. You're going to die down there. And I thought, well, I'm going to die up here, too. I mean, no matter what. And so I came up here. I left my house. I sold it. Left everything. And came up here. And Ron was taking me to look for places to live, and he took me down on Skid Row. I thought, my God, don't do that to me. Take me down on Skid Row. He says, "Now what kind of a cart would you like?" Yeah. So anyhow, I stayed at Ron's house and until I finally found my own little place and bought it. And I got a call from one of my friends in Alcoholics Anonymous on Christmas Eve 2 years ago. And she said, "I want you to have my kidney." And I said, "Are you sure? I mean, that's a lot to give away. A kidney." Damn. And I've known her about 25 years. And she said, "Yeah, I got to give it to you." So it took us a year, the whole process of matching and all these tests and stuff like that. In the meantime, Ron said to me one day, "You tell your doctor that if you're truly circling the drain, I want you to have my kidney." And so I told my doctor, and he said, "Tell him you are circling the drain." Anyhow, so Alice gave me her kidney. And Pat used to pick me up and bring me to meetings. And, you know, I mean, I didn't have to suffer a bit, spiritually or emotionally. I had a lot of physical suffering. I mean, that's not easy to have your, you know, your kidney taken out. So 3 months ago, well, I got Alice's kidney is what I did. And it's just perking right along. And 3 months ago, they found cancer in the other kidney, my native kidney. And so I just had that done 3 months ago. And they got it all. There's no doubt in my mind. This is a journey, and it's a continuum. And none of us know what's going to happen to us ever from 1 minute to the next. And all we can do is say, Thy will not mine be done, Father. And that's it. You know, you can't say, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes-Benz? You just have to, you have to put one foot in front of the, like I did when I got sober. You know, I put one foot in front of the other. And I said, if it's your will that I go, let's get the show on the road here. Otherwise, I need to try to be of service of some kind in my sobriety. And I haven't done a lot of service work. That was the first thing that I got introduced to 37 and a half years ago, was service work. And I was heavy into service work for all those years. I believe in it. And, I talk to people on the phone or newcomers. I had this newcomer I was sponsoring not very long. I was pretty sick, too. And she called me and she said, I want to read you this wonderful thing I got. I don't sponsor newcomers. I want you to read this wonderful thing. So she read this thing to me, and it was esoteric. It was just off the page. She said, what do you think? I said, I want to put a bullet in my head. Why are you reading that stuff? Stuff will make you drunk. God, read the big book. Anyhow, I want to again thank Larry. And you can call me anytime, Larry. You can say, hi, Judy. And I modified my telephone manners. I have modified my telephone manners. And I want to thank you again for allowing me to be of service. And thank you all for being here. And newcomers, don't leave. You know, we tell you to keep coming back. I'm telling you, don't leave. Just stay with us. If your ass falls off, and it will, stay. It's a promise. That's how life goes. Stay. Somebody will pick it up for you if you can't do it yourself. I promise you. Another thing that'll happen is you will not be afraid. As long as you have God in your life, and as long as God is everything or nothing to you, as long as God is everything, you're not going to spend another day in your life being afraid. It's going to be a new freedom and a new happiness. And we won't shut the door on the past, but we don't have to stare at it. So thank you very much, and God bless you all. And try to remember me in a prayer now and then. Thank you.